Welcome to Dome Patrol Premier League. Hello everyone and welcome to the second Dome Patrol United Premier League podcast since March. As you know, last week we discussed that the Premier League season was restarting this week. We've had games Wednesday, Friday and all day today on Saturday. So we've actually got some games to discuss and some things to talk about. My usual partner in crime, Ben, is unavailable this evening. So I've managed to secure an emergency loan signing. He is everyone's favourite Scouser and was on the show before lockdown and very, very brilliantly predicted Liverpool were going to lose 3-0 to Watford, which they did. Everyone say hello to Chris Coy. Chris, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Baker. Yeah, I'm very good. I do remember I hit a few nails on the head in the last predictions. I think I was nicknamed Notre Scousmus after that.
Yeah, you were. And still are.
And a Tottenham draw last night, and I predicted Brighton would nick it today. So I think I'm on a bit of a roll.
You are.
I have still not won any money on accumulators, though. Let's just put that out there. Still not won an accumulator.
I was about to ask you for tonight's lottery numbers, but clearly that's not going to work.
Yeah. As we discussed last night, I did a postcode lottery, so I can't manipulate that.
So,
I'm good, mate.
Yeah, good. First question for you, mate, obviously, is with what's been going on since March, how are you and the wife and the family to be getting on with the lockdown and everything?
Yeah, well, as you can probably tell, with a baby on the way in 6 weeks, we've got to go now. So it was perfect timing for me to kind of, you know, stay at home a little bit more, look after her, decorating. I think I've decorated every room. I think the dog's been glossed about four times. So I'm literally running out of space to decorate. Now, I've been decorating under the stairs this morning because I was bored. So that's like a bright yellow now. So yeah, I'm putting the paint away for now. But yeah, it's been good. It's been a good, nice little break, to be honest. Obviously, I appreciate that it's not been the same for everybody. You know, it's been really difficult for some people losing jobs and families and childcare, and I get that. But from a personal perspective, it's been a really nice break for me the last few months, just to reevaluate everything and you know, take a little bit of time out for myself and to reevaluate my job and life and the baby coming and stuff. So yeah, it's been fine.
Good. And nobody you know or close to you has caught the virus or anything like that?
No, touch wood. I had one friend, my friend Julian, who I'm in a band with. He was in hospital for about 4 days. He said it was horrific. But the strange one about that was that no one in his household got it. And he's got three sons who were like 21, 17 and 14, and his wife. So, you know, with this whole, like, I'm not the conspiracy theorist or anything, but you think to yourself, well, how come you can stay in a house with four people self-isolating and not one person caught it often? Yeah, it's meant to be really, you know, prevalent
contagious
in society at the moment. Yeah. So he was in a hospital. But no, besides that, everything's okay. What about yourself? Has everyone you know been okay?
Yeah, no, everybody's been fine. Like, much like you, I've had to get used to working from home and have been since the 17th of March was when I started working from home. So, forgotten what my office looks like. But one thing about work is I seem to have gotten busier since lockdown. But then I work. I just mean work in general. I work in an industry, telecommunications, where we're probably needed more now than we were before for keeping people connected. You know, cliched and stuff like that. But yeah, no, it's daughter's off school, has been since March. Wife has been going between furloughed and unfurloughed. She's currently furloughed at the moment. So it's just been odd. But do you know what? Things are slowly getting back to normal, I think. slowly getting back to normal. And
you can see that sort of getting back to that sort of normalness coming back. But you know, I think we've got to be really vigilant here. We've got to stay safe and make sure there's not a second wave of this, because I think that could be more catastrophic than the first one, to be honest.
Well, you know, look at the numbers that are happening in certain states in America at the moment. They're going through the roof at the moment, Florida and Texas particularly. So we just really need to be careful and guard against that. Now, one of the things that is obviously leading to things feeling a little bit more like normal is the fact that the Premier League is back. What have you made of the football and the games and the whole experience so far from what you've seen?
Well, I think with me before the lockdown, Everton's next game before the lockdown was Liverpool at home. So, quite frankly, I was absolutely ecstatic that the Premier League got suspended that week. Everton being 12th in the league, you know, I was not in a rush to come back. I was just made up that the universe had intervened at that point to stop them from winning it. So I was quite happy. To be honest with you, I think I've been that busy in my personal life that I've not even had time to even think about it. And as I say, with Everton being 12th, we're sort of lingering in that sort of, we're not going down, but we're not going up, you know. So for me, we weren't playing for anything really. It was just get the season done, get it out the way. But since the lockdown's happened, what it's made me realise is I don't so much miss the football. I don't know if that's just being an Everton fan because there's not much to watch sometimes, but I've missed the routine and the banter and the atmosphere and what it means to follow your club. That's what I've missed more. Just the noise and the sound and the smells of the hot dogs and the match, and I've really, really come to realise that I've massively missed that more than what's going on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because what I've noticed as well is some of these teams that when I watch them on the TV now, the intensity of play hasn't really changed. So the crowd mustn't affect players that much like we think it does. Maybe individual ones, but as a collective, the intensity is still there. So, but yeah, we'll get onto the games in a minute as well. But it was never going to be the same. I think we're sort of going through the motions now just to get it done. I've completed Netflix, so I think I pretty much need something else to watch at the moment other than painting and Netflix. So yeah, it's been good to have to have something back that's a little bit different, but it's not been the same as the James. It really hasn't.
No, it hasn't, and I don't think it was ever going to be the same. I mean, I've watched bits of every single game. I mean, I watched all of the Arsenal City game, I watched all of the United game, and I watched all of the Wolves West Ham game that was on, finished about an hour ago, and it's very, very pre-season like. There's only been one game where the intensity really, really stepped up, and that was the last 20 minutes of the United Spurs game last night. They went toe-to-toe for the last 20 minutes last night, and I think, and I'm putting my bias for United aside, that's been the best game of the return so far, I would say.
Yeah, by far the best game. I was thinking that the teams that have struggled to kind of get that momentum are the likes, you know, your Villas and teams like that, whereby you kind of see the importance of having Villa Park bouncing and what effect that has on Villa. While you've got teams like your Chelsea, your City, they're that professional and that clinical. They'll beat you on a Sunday league pitch in three inches of muddy rain and a muddy pitch. Do you know what I mean? They don't care where they're playing, teams like that. So I think this is going to benefit the top six, seven, maybe more than the bottom six or seven. I think they're really going to struggle to find momentum and that 12th man in the crowd that kind of carries them home a little bit. The Norwiches, the Bournemouths, you know, teams like that, Palace, they have bouncing atmospheres at home. It's been quite boring as well, to be honest. I mean, five out of the seven games about 0-0 at half time. So just shows you kind of, you know, it's clear it's going to take some time to get back to that match sharpness as
Only
well.
Two of the goals scored so far have been scored in the first half of games. I think that was the stat, and that was the Spurs goal last night and Man City's goal against Arsenal, which was scored in injury time at the end of the first half.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the formalities of how the league's going to end and stuff like that. But what's more interesting to me is how football's going to recover from this. What are we going to learn from it? with the financial market and the, you know, the skyrocketing prices of players, all that stuff's got to be looked at, and how the 92 English clubs in England are supported on the tier of football,
yeah,
so
yeah,
that they don't go bankrupt and we lose that feeder, the youth system feed that comes from them clubs as well.
Well, we already lost one team last year in Bury, didn't we? Who had been, you know, one of the lower league teams. They've gone under now. You know, obviously I follow a team in League Two, Cheltenham Town, and you know they're okay at the moment. But if there's a sustained period of football where fans are not allowed to attend, you know, teams in the lower leagues get the majority of their income from fans attending the games.
Yeah,
and season tickets and stuff like that. You know, yeah, there are going to be some teams,
financial impact.
Yeah, there's going to be some teams in the lower leagues that are going to be struggling. Now, they've introduced a wage cap in the League One and League Two next season, as I understand it, which will help. But you're going to have players who are used to earning at that level a certain amount of money, who are not going to earn that money anymore because it isn't going to be there. So they're going to have to take lesser. It's, you yeah. know, it's, I mean, this whole coronavirus thing kind of gives society as a whole a bit of a reset, I think. But particularly football, it really is a reset for football. All levels.
Yeah, definitely, as well. Even as you were saying about the lower leagues and stuff as yeah. well. Yeah, I was just going to say, it's like the lower leagues and stuff like that. It's not just the... It's not just the, you know, sorting the league table out and the point system and stuff. It's the mental health side of it. What effect it's going to have on players who are out of contract at the end of this month and free agents? Are they going to get picked up? It's going to be this massive, you know, I think this landslide effect after when it's died down of picking and repairing the damage, really, in on so many different levels.
Yeah. Well, you've already seen there are two players in the Premier League that have already told their clubs they're not going to play now, because they're out of contract on the 30th of June. So Ryan Fraser from Bournemouth, he's already told them he's not going to sign a new contract and isn't going to play because he doesn't want to get injured. And I believe it was Aaron Lennon from Burnley came out today and said the same, because he's out of contract on the 30th of June. To explain to people, contracts run from the 1st of July to the 30th of June. That's usually how football contracts run. The 30th of June is usually the end of the season, like the official end of the season. But obviously, because the season's going on past that, some players are obviously thinking of themselves, which I completely get. Because if they were to play for, you know, until the 13th of July or whatever it was, and then get injured, they might not get a contract next year if they're out of contract. So they've gone from earning money to earning no money. So it's that type of thing. And I'm surprised we haven't seen it more. I mean, the good thing is the majority of the lower leagues, League One and League Two, there's only the playoffs that are being played. So it's only four teams that are playing instead of 24. But I could guarantee you at that level, there would be a lot of players who wouldn't play. Now, Cheltenham had a player, Luke Varney. You may have heard of him. He used to play for Crewe. He's played Blackpool, I think he's played for. He pulled his hamstring in warm-up for the game on Thursday night, and he's out of contract at the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be really interesting to see what effect this has on players as well, because obviously, you know, coaching badges cost a lot of money nowadays. So either these players want to use somebody to go into coaching badges.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at there's a screen behind Benny. I'm just on a video call. I just called you Ben. Oh my God,
I'm going
to get kicked off the podcast. James.
It's all right. We're actually describing a live goal in the Bournemouth Crystal Palace game that's just happened. A really good finish, actually.
Player running down the left hand side.
Yeah, right hand side.
Cut back to the penalty spot and first time right foot goal into the bottom corner. Absolute crack and finish
Are you? Yeah, are you by the looks of it. So yeah, live goal on the podcast.
I'm just putting my fantasy team last night as well.
Shame we're not live streaming, but never mind. So on what you've seen so far, who was impressed? Who has done what you thought they would do? And is there any team that has really disappointed you in the... I mean, I know we've only seen 10 teams, I think, so far of the actual full league, but what are your impressions so far on who's impressed and who hasn't? And
Yes, yeah, so far, I mean, the first game that we came up to was Arsenal Sheffield United. I'll probably do it in the order because I can work out my head a little bit better then.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah, the Aston Villa Sheffield United game for me was very slow and sloppy. Villa have really disappointed me in that game. I thought they'd come out a bit faster off the blocks. But it's what I expected after a 3 month gap. You know, it's going to take time to pick up. As I said before, I think the teams in the bottom six or seven rely on crowd sometimes more than say the big six do, and I really felt the atmosphere was drained out of Villa Park the other night, and both teams suffered for it. I was really, you know, I'm really impressed with Jack Grealish at Villa. I think he's someone Everton and some of the top six sides should really be looking at. But I felt that game was there for the taking, and someone like him could really take that game by the scruff of his neck and get the win for Villa, but wasn't to be. I'm really impressed with City, but yeah. I always am. Arsenal were it was an absolute horror show, wasn't it? You know, Mari and Xhaka
David
going
Luiz.
Off. Oh yeah, and they had those early injuries. I think Xhaka went off in the first, I think it was like the first 10, 15 minutes, maybe even yeah. before that. That didn't help, and then they had to change the tactics, and it just put Arsenal, they were all over the place. And then you know, in order to beat Manchester City, you know, Manchester City need to have an off day, and you need Everton to click. You know, that's how you beat City, and Arsenal just weren't even clicking, so they had no chance. Southampton really impressed me. Thought they played really well the other night. I think they're better away from home, Southampton.
Yeah. Considering Southampton were struggling November, they've done really well to turn around and get and pull themselves away and actually are looking like a decent upper mid-table team at the moment.
Yes, I mean, they got that 9-0 at home to Leicester, didn't they, at the beginning of October? And then they've won 7 out of 15 away and only 4 from 15 at home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to win over more than half your away games just shows you that. Is it the crowd? Is it the atmosphere? Is it playing at home? This is what intrigues me about this league now. It's on a completely different playing field now. You're playing in empty stadiums. Who can motivate each other? Which teams can perform the best under these circumstances?
Yeah.
And I think the standout team, I'll not just scouts was coming through again. I think the standout team from now to the end of the season is going to be Chelsea. I think Chelsea are equipped enough to go on a real good run the next 7 or 8 games, which doesn't bode well for you because I know you're chasing them with Wolves for that fourth spot. But I can't see United getting that off Chelsea. Watch Chelsea lose 9 games in a row now.
So would you say that, I mean, Chelsea, I think, are playing tomorrow, aren't they? Chelsea, one of the games tomorrow. Would you say Chelsea are going to pip Leicester for third?
What's the points gap between them two? Are they Chelsea and Leicester?
I think it's 6 now after Leicester drew today.
Right, no. Maybe not that far. Because Leicester are not going to drop that many points. Leicester are a good team.
It's 6, but Chelsea have got a game in hand, obviously, which they're playing tomorrow.
Oh, maybe then. Maybe they could, but as I say, what third and fourth, there's not really much difference in that position, except maybe 10 or 15 million pounds, and you still have to you have to qualify for the Champions League in fourth, and you don't in third, or you have to qualify anyway.
Fourth gets you into the qualification round, I think.
Right, so they'll want to push for that.
No,
third,
actually, no.
They?
I think it probably gets you automatically in.
Right, okay, and then obviously, I think there was is there an extra place maybe potentially coming from Liverpool winning the Champions League last year?
No. That would have been this year. No. So the only thing that's going to happen is if City get their ban upheld, then whoever finishes fifth will get into the Champions League, and City won't be in Europe at all. But there's been no decision on that yet. So.
Right. My most impressive player from the game so far is Fernandes, United. What a player he's going to be. He's the type of player that can take hold of a game, and it's something Manchester United have been missing for since Mourinho or Moyes took over. And I think he'll get the best out of Pogba as well, because Pogba come off the bench and totally changed that game.
It was a really, really interesting little 25-minute cameo from United in midfield last night. Now, I think Pogba didn't start because the midfield three that played and started the game, yes, they were doing really well before the break. But I think last night proved that having those two, if you have two midfielders that can unlock defences like they can, you need to play them both. Don't you?
Yeah.
He reminded me
when he played that pass to Martial in the box. He reminded me of Scholes.
Yes.
Someone who just picks the ball that quick on the box and just looks and pings a ball straight to his feet.
And he fizzed it as well, didn't he? Absolutely, yeah. Fizzed it.
Now, the problem Man United have got there is they've got the people that can put them balls into their positions, but what they haven't got for me is that player on the end of that ball.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 goes in. Van Nistelrooy would have put the net into the stand.
Solskjaer would have put them in as well.
York, Cole, Rooney,
yeah.
Van Persie, put whoever you want in that position off that ball and there's another goal. So
yeah.
I think United are starting to get better, starting to fill in gaps where they've been struggling. Still got a long way to go, mind, don't get me wrong, but there's improvement there now. And I think with De Gea, I mean, would you go out and replace him at the moment? Is he seven mistakes? I think he's done costly errors, I think, this season alone, which is the highest of any keeper.
This might be controversial, but I would be seriously considering playing Henderson next season, the one that's on loan at Sheffield United.
I've just got down here on a piece of paper, maybe go get Henderson, ? That's what
he's loan's up at the end of the season, so he's our player and he's got a contract with us. So this might be the probably not the best summer to sell De Gea, but Paris Saint-Germain or somebody will come in with a decent enough bid and you've got a homegrown goalkeeper who's been probably the best goalkeeper in the Premier League this season and will be England's number one for the Euros next year.
Yeah, and this is the thing, what lets Jordan Pickford down as well. Jordan Pickford, I seen him when he played for Sunderland at Goodison a few years ago, and I said to the guy next to me, we need to buy him. Yeah, I mean, his distribution from the box is absolutely unbelievable. He can ping like 80-yard balls down the wing, straight to the winger, and create an attack. But you can see Pickford gets really frustrated when he makes mistakes because he knows for a fact he's nailing the coffin of getting a move to a top four club by doing that, because top four clubs will just go, no, we want someone who's prone to not making any mistakes. Well, it's hard to do. So I think Pickford could be an option for you, but I don't see Everton selling him unless it's an astronomical figure, which it won't be.
Well, we've got Henderson already, so.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
But, you know, I mean, look, De Gea deserves a bit of credit. He's got a lot of credit with United because he was superb between, the Moyes to where he is now. You know, he was absolutely superb and, you know, stopped us actually dropping into proper mid-table.
Yeah. Yeah, they did, yeah. As for the Tottenham side of the conversation as well, I thought Tottenham were, you know, typical Mourinho at the moment, you know, get that 1-0 up and then just kind of sit back and be happy with it.
And
that might work against someone like a Palace or a Bournemouth, no disrespect to them teams, but, you know, to teams like Man United, you should have went on to win that game because they were just sat back and they were there for the taking.
Mourinho would have attacked, Tottenham probably would have won last night.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know the stats from 2004 onwards when Mourinho came to Chelsea, but I'd love to see the difference in how many goals Chelsea was scoring then to what his team scored after 2012 onwards.
Mm.
I'd be really interested to see, because I think his whole charisma and demeanour has changed since he went to United. He lost that boyish charm and that wit and that overconfidence that made him what he was in the first place when he first came here. As for Spurs, nowhere in four now. So to get top four, they need to start getting some wins together. But the problem with that is they've got Sheffield United, Arsenal and Leicester to play in the top nine. So I think fifth best hope for Spurs at the moment.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think Mourinho is going to have a big job on his hands to improve that squad in the summer. They've already got money problems, had to take a big loan. I think there's a few problems at Spurs. So let's go and talk about probably the most disappointing team of the restart. North London rivals of Tottenham. Arsenal. Well, what's going on there?
Ben's going to love you for this one, James.
well, if he was here, to, if he was here, I would have asked him the same question. Don't worry.
Yeah, I think Arteta was the first football, you know, connection, you know, the first person connected to the Premier League that contracted the coronavirus. So
yeah,
you could imagine it was a bit up the wall at Arsenal then. Obviously, when you get a new manager in, you need games, you need momentum, you need to work out the squad, finish the season, go into your pre-season, reevaluate, sign the players you want to get rid of the ones you don't. And I don't think Arteta, with this lockdown, I think that's the team so far that it's really affected the most. It's really knocked the confidence, knocked the planning, knocked the preparation. And it's Arsenal are a funny team. When they're poor, they are really poor, you know. And when they're good, they're fire. You know, they're on fire. So it's a strange one with Arsenal. But they've had no win away in 26 away games versus the top six. So in 26 games away from only having had a win. David Luiz is having a nightmare season. I think he's conceded about four penalties, the joint most in Premier League history this season.
Yeah.
I just don't think they're coming out of lockdown too well, Arsenal. And against City as well. I mean, to come back from the lockdown and City away be your first game, and then you lose two players in the first 10, 15 minutes, then a player that Arteta said before the game wasn't really mentally there that night comes on and then has a 23-minute horror show. And then go to Brighton again a few days later, where Brighton haven't played. You know, as I say to you, these games are going to really, really affect some teams with the pace at which these games are coming. Some teams are going to really strive and do really well and, you know, and be all right with it, but some aren't. Did you watch the game, the Arsenal game as well?
I watched the Arsenal City game and I expected nothing. I expected nothing else. I said to in another group chat I've got going on that game would be 3-0 City. So I wasn't surprised at all. I've not watched too much of their game from today, but it just sounds like it was a classic Arsenal performance. Now, they lost 2-1 away at Brighton. They lost their goalkeeper, probably for the season, with a knee injury. There's been some controversy over the challenge that caused the injury. Now, I've seen it. I didn't think it was that bad. It looked like an accident to me. But Leno is probably, I mean, he was really good on Wednesday night away at City, you know, kept them in it to begin with. But yeah, they're just, historically, Arsenal have always had a soft centre. They've been weak. They don't like the physical element of the game. Now, the physical element of the game has kind of gone out of the game a little bit now, but Arsenal are that type of team where you stick a challenge in on a couple of them and they're just going to shy away. And I don't know how you change that.
Well, that to me is just, I mean, if you said to me that's a description of the Arsenal teams that I grew growing up, I mean, I'm 38 now. I mean, I missed them in the 80s, but, you know, 95 onwards with Mason and players like that, Ian Wright, they were a tough side, you know. And then you go to the post-2000s and they had probably one of the hardest teams in the league when it comes to, you know, you get them a kick, you get the kick back. You know, Keown, Adams, Dixon, Winterburn, Vieira, Petit, they were solid.
And Thierry Henry wasn't shy either, was he?
Neither was Bergkamp. Bergkamp wasn't afraid to get stuck into people. He didn't take any prisoners either. But, you know, as you say, the game's evolved, and I think this is why some of the managers that are around now that come into the game, like you like some Mourinho coming back, you know, the game's changed, and I don't think their styles have adapted. You've got this new age of manager coming through now, like your Artetas, who have been under Guardiola for a few years. It's this tiki-taka football and the 4-3-3 like Liverpool play. And I think that sort of that element of tough tackling, tough midfields, and strong back fours, and you know, like a Sheffield United maybe in a bit more, like that sort of that element's dying out the game, but it can be really effective for some teams. And maybe Arsenal need to get that backbone back again and find that spirit that they had around the you know, when they went on the Invincibles, when they went unbeaten that season. They're a very strange club, Arsenal. I think out of all the teams in the Premier League, I think Arsenal are probably most effective from boardroom level down. Maybe United are up there as well. You know, it seems that the boards at Arsenal United seem to have a lot of say on how results happen on the pitch by how it's governed and how it's managed. You know, there seems to be a bit of an imbalance in the Arsenal boardroom. I mean, you know, I know Yusupov, the Ukrainian businessman, he sponsors Everton's Finch Farm, no, USM Finch Farm, Everton's training ground. And apparently he backed the share, he went a lot of money to go and buy Everton. And then sold his shares in Arsenal. So they've got Kroenke now, haven't they? Is it Kroenke? Yeah.
Kroenke, yeah, the guy that owns the Rams. Yeah. Rams in the NFL, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so they've got him, and it just seems to be it's paying the stadium back. And, you know, Arsenal fans, couldn't wait to get Wenger out the door. They really couldn't. They held him out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's backfired since. Be careful what you wish for, in a way.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, it was a slightly different departure to Ferguson leaving United. But whoever followed Ferguson was going to fail. Whoever followed Wenger was going to fail, just because between the two of them, they had so much success and left a blueprint on that club. It was a hide into nothing for whoever took over. Now, I mean, Moyes was the wrong person at the wrong time for United. That needed somebody going in there. That squad had 1 year left in them, pretty much, after Ferguson left. That's when Mourinho needed to go to United, not Moyes. My personal opinion. I mean, look at what Moyes is doing to West Ham at the moment. They're in serious danger, West Ham. And I made the point last week, I think they're going to go down, because I just have no faith in David Moyes at all.
Well, you just mentioned a really good point there. A little penny dropped in my head about that. I mean, the managers that you mentioned there, your Ferguson, your Wenger, your Mourinho, your Guardiola, they're not just managers. They're cultural change. They change culture. Mm. They change style. They changed. Wenger come over and changed the diet. You know, the players weren't going out drinking all the time, even though Ray Parlour and the Wednesday club or the Friday club or whatever they used to have, or the Tuesday club it was called, used to go on the beers every Tuesday.
Any day ended in a Y club.
Any day ended in a Y club. But he brought the fitness coaches over. He changed the diet. And that's why they were so successful. Ferguson come to United and completely revamped a club that was, you know, in the doldrums for a few years.
The club as a whole.
The Busby Babes.
Youth team upwards, yeah.
Exactly. Mourinho come over and changed the culture of English football.
Yeah.
Pretty much, just by what he'd done. So in order to follow Ferguson, Guardiola and Wenger into the next job, you need to be the next trendsetter. You need to be the next big thing, like a Zidane, like a Guardiola at United. Someone where who demands respect straight away. That's why I'm a bit struggling with this Ancelotti thing at Everton, because I think he's a great manager, but is the game moving on from what made Ancelotti so successful?
And is he going to be there for the long term?
Is he there for the long term? Can he bring the youth through? Is he going to change the culture at Everton in the time he's got? But then you look at you mentioned managers like Eddie Howe to come to Everton, you think, no, you've got massive pressure at Everton, there's massive expectation.
Yeah, no,
although you'd be surprised as to where we finished in the league, you think, well, why have Everton? You've got a massive expectation. You know, you finish bottom half most seasons or top six if you're lucky. But we do. We have a massive expectation at Everton. And if, as you say, I mentioned the couple I spoke to. I think it was Josh last night. I was chatting to in the WhatsApp group about managers who could follow Ferguson, and the only ones in my eyes were Klopp, Rodgers, Guardiola, and I mentioned Ancelotti as well, just for that respect factor. But really difficult jobs to follow, especially when they've changed the culture of a club, and then Arteta's come in. And would you say that they've kept the Wenger culture? They haven't. They're going away from that.
Yeah. So,
you know,
You've mentioned him. Klopp.
Yeah.
What's he done and how has he got them? I'm not going to say their name.
Yeah.
How has he got them from where they were when he took over to where they are now? What has he done?
Okay.
How has he done it?
The one thing that you need to remember when you come to Liverpool is it's like New Orleans in a way. It's a community city. It's very much based on, if you come in and catch the community and you catch what the heartbeat is and you understand what the people want and desire, you've got them on side.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got 55,000 Liverpool fans in Anfield. Trust me, if they're down your neck, you ain't winning Anfield. It ain't happening, right? It ain't happening.
No.
He come and he goes on the pitch and he's on the line. He's passionate. He got the city straight away.
He gets the people straight away.
He changed the culture of that club.
Yeah.
He gets it. And as I said to you, he changed the culture of a club. Yep. And that's what you need to do to be successful. He's going to be the next big thing. He's going to take Liverpool on a 5, 6, 7, 8 year streak. No, I believe that's straight. I mean, it's hard to say on an Evertonian, but as I mentioned before, you know, your Wenger, your Ferguson, your Mourinho, Klopp and Guardiola are your next ones. But I think Guardiola's even burning out a little bit sometimes with this Champions League stress on his shoulders because he can't get that chalice at the moment that he's so...
Well, he's only ever won it with one team and one player, hasn't he?
Exactly. So the Klopp thing is, Klopp's come in and he's created this dynamic playing style that, don't get me wrong, it's been phenomenal. They're a great... I mean, it pains me to say it, but you can't deny they're amazing to watch. They play total football. Mm. They're phenomenal. We had to put four past Barcelona the way they did, and the cheek of Alexander-Arnold with that corner. You can only but take your hat off to them.
Yeah, you can. Okay. Look, they've been the best team this year by an absolute frigging mile, and it's not even been close.
Yeah. But this is not to take anything away from them, and I'm really not taking anything away from them. But you've got to understand there's been a lot of teams in transition as well. You know, Arsenal losing their manager, Everton losing their manager, Tottenham sacking Pochettino, Solskjaer coming in. So there's a lot of teams in transition, and Liverpool have peaked while everyone else has dropped. Their standards have dropped. Lampard coming in. Sheffield United are flying, Wolves are flying. So there's a transition going on at the moment.
Mm.
That Liverpool have just jumped into that transition and filled that gap and gone, actually, we can dominate now. You know, no team in Premier League history has gone that far ahead. You know what I mean? It's so that says everything. That proves that there's an imbalance in the league at the moment. But that's not to take anything away from Liverpool. Liverpool are, I know it pains me to say it, but they are one of the top three teams in the world at the moment. Not just the UK, in the world.
Absolutely they are. Absolutely they are. I mean, you just go back to last season. They took City to the last game of the season. Right? So, you know, teams winning the league 3 years in a row doesn't happen very often, unless it's in Scotland, which is a pointless... Anyway.
12 years in a row.
I won't even talk about that. You know, United only did it once, 3 years in a row. You know, when they were at their peak. So City to win it 3 years in a row was always going to be a challenge. And I genuinely believe that Guardiola is so desperate for the Champions League. He's taken his eye off the ball in the Premier League this year.
Yeah.
Now, make no mistake about it. I think his eye will be back on the ball next year. And with the City-Liverpool title chase, because that's what it'll be. I think they're too far ahead of everybody else, even now. The title race between them two next season could be sensational. I think Chelsea will be closer. I think United will be closer. But they've got to make up a gap of what? 30 points? United are 36 points behind Liverpool? That's insane.
Yeah, so a Liverpool that good or a United, you know, don't get me wrong, Liverpool have been that good. But let's have it right. The competition hasn't been as fierce as it has been over the last maybe 10, 15 years in the Premier League. Also, you know, we were talking before about Klopp coming into Liverpool and what he's done differently. And Ancelotti's done the same at Everton. He's come in and you see him around town talking to the fans in the city and things like that. And then what happens with them, the byproduct of that is the fact that the fans will be a little bit more forgiven when things aren't going right. Or we won't get on the back as quickly as we would with Allardyce or a Moyes or a Silva. You know, this Ancelotti is one of the top 3-4 managers ever.
One
of the top 20 players in Europe in the 90s as well with that Milan team.
He
knows his stuff. But it's a case of he's you know, with Silva. Silva gets beat 3-0 at home. You're gunning for his head in the first game. If Ancelotti gets beat 3-0 in his first game, you go, oh, well, it's the player's fault. It's not him. So we start looking at the players then. We don't focus on the manager because it can't be Ancelotti. It's impossible.
Yeah,
it can't be his fault,
surely. He's really good.
He's really good, yeah. So you kind of go, oh, right, okay. So, you know, with this Klopp, you can only just... I mean, every club in the Premier League would have Klopp tomorrow.
Yeah.
Every club.
Yeah, no. Right, not being funny, every club in Europe would probably have
the world
Klopp
would
tomorrow.
Have Klopp.
Yeah. I mean, look, what's going to happen with him is he's either going to go to Real Madrid or Barcelona, or the German national team are going to come calling. That's his only step. Because if he was to go to Bayern Munich, that's a backward step at the moment.
Yeah.
Real Madrid and Barcelona, football, current football team-wise, are probably not on Liverpool's level. But as a club, the two clubs, they are the two shining lights of world football, aren't they? They just are.
I think Klopp would get more satisfaction though from going into a club and turning it round, or you know, bringing them back out of the sort of like I wouldn't say the dark ages, because Liverpool won a lot of trophies, but you know, that dark period of not winning a title. I think he thrives on that challenge more than he maybe would at Madrid or Barcelona. Where
so AC Milan or something like that then.
Maybe, or do you know what I think will happen with Klopp is, I think he'll manage Liverpool for another 4 years maybe, win the Champions League again, win a couple of titles, an FA Cup, and he'll burn himself out.
Yeah.
Because I think he's that intense. I think he'll just call it a day after Liverpool and go, do you know what, I can't, the energy I've put into Liverpool, I can't do that anywhere else because of the fabric of what Liverpool's like as a city. You're going to find it very hard to go into a stadium and get the same feeling in Milan as you do walking out in front of the Kop every week. How do you follow that?
Yeah,
and that pains me to say that, but how do you follow it? And sometimes he comes across like you're like, Jürgen, just I don't want to say calm down and scout Saxon.
Stereotypical. You're gonna have to do
calm
it now.
Calm down, Jürgen. Yeah, calm down. For God's sake, do you know what I mean? You're gonna give yourself a cardiac arrest.
He's a guy
that puts everything on the table, but I think that will be his downfall in the end when he'll burn himself out.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
right. I think that pretty much covers everything that's happened so far with a bit of extra chat on stuff. So, your team are playing their first game tomorrow night. Obviously, they can't win the league tomorrow night, which is good for you. They're going to do it. No need to dwell on that. Obviously, that is a game that you would usually go to, being a season ticket holder. Give me your prediction for your game tomorrow.
It's going to be really, really interesting to see. You know, I mean, when I spoke before about how an atmosphere in a stadium can have an effect on how the players get G'd up and get motivated, Goodison Park full on a derby night is intimidating. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Everton handle that.
Yeah.
I don't think Liverpool have got any problems whatsoever handling anything. I don't think Liverpool are fazed by anything. Mm. Everton are. I think Everton will be. I think it'll be a bit of a shock to the system. My head's thinking one thing, but I'm going to go with my heart and I'm going to go with my bias. I'd love to see an Everton win, obviously. But will it feel the same as normal derby win? Probably not, because it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't affect anything.
But
can I see Liverpool going out and putting 7 past us? I can see that as well. Do you know what I mean? I'm really worried that it's going to go either way. So I'm going to sit on the fence and I'll go with a 1-1.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say I think it'll be a draw as well. I just think that it's the first game back for both teams. It's a derby. Whilst the intensity of the crowd won't be there, it's still red against blue. You know, there'll still be that needle to it on the pitch, I think. But yeah, one all, let them carry on and go and do what they've got to do over the next couple of weeks to win the title with the asterisks against and stuff like that. But.
Yeah. You'd like to think that the Everton players will be up for it, but I think what comes with this game is the motivation to win. Liverpool want to win to cement that title, while Everton players, a lot of foreign players in there. They're not Scousers, they're not from the city. For me, if I'm playing for Everton tomorrow, I want to beat Liverpool at under six level, under seven level, right up to the women's game. I would be up for it every game. I don't care where we're playing, on a Sunday league pitch or a park or a beach, whatever. I want to beat.
You're playing against somebody in that shirt. You want to beat.
I'm playing against that. Even if you put the Liverpool shirt on, James, you know, I'm going straight for you in the first 5 minutes.
Well, that would never happen. I can assure you of that for nothing. But,
or a Man United shirt, even.
Well, yeah.
But no, yeah, so I think, you know, the likes of Tom Davis and players like that, you know, Jonjo Kenny, unfortunately, he's out on loan at Schalke at the moment. But
lads who are from
the local area would come in really handy. But let's have it right. Everton have got more injuries coming out of lockdown than we did when we went into it. I think we got seven or eight first
players out. Yeah, which is bizarre.
So there's going to be a lot of under-23s coming through, or a lot of young lads. So hopefully, I mean, I just think Liverpool are going to have too much quality for them young kids, to be honest with you, tomorrow.
Yeah.
But Liverpool were on a bit of a damp squid before we went away. So
Yeah. They lost the last two games, didn't they? Before
it's
lockdown.
It's the strangest derby ever. Strange.
It is, but look, from your point of view, they can't win the league tomorrow in your stadium, so that's got to be a relief.
I'll take that.
Right, Chris, thank you very much for joining me this week. You were invited on this week anyway, but it turned into James and Chris rather than James, Ben and Chris. So as you know, we will be asking you to come on again. We enjoy having you on and your take on football, and it's always good to hear that Scouse accent from you anyway.
Ah, thanks. You're the first person in the history of life to ever say it's so nice to hear your Scouse accent.
Yeah, well, look, you're an Everton fan, so I like you.
Yeah, well, listen, mate, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure. I really enjoy, you know, just a little bit of a break from life at the moment, just have a little bit of a chat about stuff, and I'll say hello to Ben Fawes. I'm sure I'll drop him a message later and just drop a little Brighton tag in to wind him up.
He's not very happy, I can assure you of that. He's not happy.
I'm still coming to terms with Ash popping up on the WhatsApp chat group again before. That was your fault.
I know he'll disappear again soon anyway.
But we'll have words about this in private.
We will. Right, Chris,
so listen,
thank you
take
very
care, mate.
Yeah, and you, mate, thank you very much. Right, thank you everybody. That's it for this week's Premier League podcast on the Dome Patrol United. If you're not already, please subscribe to the Dome Patrol United on all of your podcasts. Follow Dome Patrol UK and Dome Patrol US on Twitter. The podcasts that we have, we've got the NFL season coming up again soon. There'll be plenty of coverage of the NFL, talking about the Pelicans, talking about LSU when all that regains. So yeah, drop us a like, subscribe, do whatever you can. And thank you very much, and I'll speak to you next week.